Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
And Russell did want to change that about himself. As a matter of fact, he got into treatment. He worked really hard by going to 12-step meetings. He got himself a sponsor. Because he was working with me, he did the Certified Sexual Addictions Therapy Approach, which is the Patrick Carnes Recovery Pass Kit approach, and I'm telling you, the guy made a lot of changes. But until he knew where to go to get the help he needed, he just was spinning his wheels. So welcome to the show. You're at the right place. If you're an addict, this is the place you can come so that you can find specific treatment approaches that speak to you. And if you're a partner and you're trying to understand this disease, this illness, this disorder, welcome to you too, because I know that it can be really tough to be in love with somebody who has this compulsion. And I got to tell you, there are so many people that suffer from this problem and they don't know where to turn. Now, we've got a lot of resources out there for you, but unless you know who to go to find out about the resources, you're not going to necessarily go to the right people and seek out the right treatment. So welcome to the show. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, Carol the Coach, and I am the host of the show every Monday night, 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and I welcome you to finding out more about this affliction. And, you know, I actually work with renowned experts all over the world. And tonight, I am so happy to be working with a woman who we had her booked a couple of months ago, and there was a glitch in the internet service, and I couldn't have her on, and I was so disappointed. Suzanne Zellner-Zink. She's a certified trainer of hypnosis and NLP, and she helps the sexually addicted in a non-invasive manner. She uses hypnosis, and she's going to talk tonight about how she does that to create healthy, normally attached relationships. She has a downloadable book called Do I Have a Sex Addiction? Now What? We wanted to have her on the show in October, well, on October 5th. And so we are so happy that before November winds down, we've got her to come back. And you can find more about her at www.dawningvisions.com. And I just am really excited. I am a hypnotherapist, so I believe in hypnosis for a variety of treatments. And I have to admit, I've never used it for sexual addiction. So I, like you, can't wait to find out what she has to say. We're going to have her on the show in about 10 minutes. Now, I received an email, and I encouraged this man to call the show specifically at 646-595-3284. We're going to call him Tom. And he sent me this email, and he said, "Hi, Carol. I have been listening to your podcast for over a year now, and I have identified my long-term life problem, as with many who have called your show. I'm 65 years old and have been addicted to this disease for over 45 years, basically since puberty. I've been happily married for going on 32 years now, and have 3 grown daughters and 5 grandchildren. He says, as with many of my addicts, he says, I am a well-liked man in my community, and I'm normal in every way. I had a drinking problem, but got involved with AA and have been sober for over 6 years. Well, good for Tom, because I got to tell you, this is a disorder that typically has multiple addictions. And by far, what we know, and I'm not minimizing being an alcoholic, but what we know is sexual addiction is tougher than alcoholism to get treatment for. And then what we know is that, let's just say, somebody who has both illnesses gets treatment for the alcoholism, well, their sexual addiction usually goes up. So as I said, he said, I've been sober for over 6 years. He said, I've failed in my business and lost jobs in the past and always blamed it on the drink. Life has gotten better for me since being sober, but I am still a sex addict. So Tom sounds like he doesn't know where to go. He says, you know, I act out by fetishes. And then he discusses them, their diapers, humiliation, etc. And, of course, as you can understand, his wife is very uncomfortable with all this. So he indulges in this behavior alone when he's traveling on business. He's never been with anyone other than his wife. He would never be unfaithful to her, as he is an honest man. But this fetish has replaced all sex with his wife. He says, my wife asks me what is wrong, and I tell her it's just my age. But that's not true. It's that this nasty fetish has ruined all my enjoyment with my wife. We're still very close and do everything with each other. It's just not a place I want to go with her, i.e., he's talking about sex. And he doesn't want to have to be honest. You know, he says he's an honest man, but Tom, you're not being honest. Because truly, it is not your age, it's your fetish that keeps you from being sexual with your wife. And I got to tell you, that is the case with many, many, many sex addicts. They have conditioned their brain to have sexual arousal from something and then nothing else that's within the conventional, normal sexuality seems to arouse you. He says, I now work for myself and need this to relieve stress in my day. I now look back and can see how this disease has robbed me of more than money, time, and happiness. I think this has started when I was very young. My mother diapered me when I was around 5 just to play a silly game one rainy day. She never realized the damage she caused. I still remember that day like it was yesterday. So here I am now. I want to take the proper steps to break the chains and free myself. What views, input, or help do you have for me? Any would be welcomed. Thanks a lot, Carol. Sincerely, Tom. Well, I am so pleased that, A, you're talking to me about this problem, because there is no doubt that this is a tough situation, as with many other forms of fetishes or forms of sexual addiction. It can be very embarrassing to talk to an average counselor about it or a pastor. And, you know, you're right. We do not blame your mother. Your mother was playing a game with you, and for whatever reason, it created a special place in your brain that became compulsive. You know, Tom, you didn't tell me if you have any kind of obsessive-compulsive problems, whether you have specific anxiety. But what we know is that oftentimes the arousal template is activated because there's a variety of things going on. It may be a specific kinesthetic feeling that you're experiencing, along with a real hit to the brain. And I mean a good hit, a warm, fuzzy feeling because your mom was playing with you. It felt secure, you know, and that connection developed this compulsion. I've worked with other people that had this kind of problem. I remember a CEO that would go to department stores dressed in diapers and would actually defecate in the diapers and hang out in the bathroom until he felt like he had met his arousal template. Now, what I would encourage you to do is to go to sexhelp.com. And I would put your zip code in, your state and or your zip code, and find out who is the nearest CSAT to you. And if for some reason there is not a CSAT in your area, a CSAT being a certified sexual addictions therapist, then I would look for somebody who can Skype with you and direct you to the proper resources. You know, some states allow their therapist to Skype, other states don't. But regardless, for instance, I'm not sure Indiana allows me to do that, but I call it coaching. And what I do when I coach is that I help people to get to the proper resources. I talk about, we together may research books on this type of fetish. Or I may encourage you to go to a 12-step meeting in your area. And if you don't have a 12-step meeting, and that can happen, you can call telephone meetings. And literally, when you call these telephone meetings, you can be part of a 12-step group that helps you to control this behavior, because you're the one who said, this is ruining your life. You know, it's affecting your relationship with your wife. You're holding a secret. You're not being honest. And as a result, well, you and I both know that it can be very, very difficult to control this thing. You need recovery tools. Now, I guarantee you that if you go to 12-step meetings, get a sponsor, go to a CSAT, or at least Skype one through sexhelp.com, participate in a fellowship, do your recovering readings, read the SA or the SAA book, do some spiritual readings, and participate in healthy behaviors, you will get healthy. And I'm glad that you are not participating in any extracurricular activities that involve other people. But you know, this is an insidious problem because you're saying to yourself, this isn't hurting anybody. I'm not cheating on my wife. I'm just participating in a behavior that she would not allow me to participate in. And that is a rationalization, and it's a justification, and it's not going to take you to the place you need to be, which is you need to develop intimacy with your wife, and this behavior is interfering with it, so it's not a healthy behavior. So I highly encourage you to do the work, get with people who really understand all these types of behaviors, and work on this issue. And I know, Tom, that you can do it. You started by calling me, well, not calling me, emailing me, and, you know, I did encourage you to call me, and it was just too difficult for you. I get that. So I wish you the best of luck. Keep me posted on your progress, and I promise you it will be different if you follow the recovery tools and get yourself with the experts that can help you. There's no problem too large that we can't absolutely get you to the right places and right resources and change your life forever. 65 is not too old. So don't let your age stop you. Let's live the next 25 or 30 years with quality intimacy, because you know that this kind of thing does interfere with intimacy, and it has created an intimacy disorder. And besides that, Tom, your wife, she deserves that closeness with you. I'm not guilting you. I'm just telling you, it's not just about you, Tom. It's also about her, too. So thanks for emailing me. I really appreciate that. And as I explained earlier, we're going to have just a wonderful guest on. She's going to talk about how hypnosis can make a difference in sexual addiction. I'm glad to have you all listening to the show. This is the only show that talks about sexual addiction on a weekly basis, and so I promise you that you absolutely can get your needs met and make it work. So I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheath, and we're going to be talking about, can hypnosis really work to alleviate sexual addiction, or at least help you manage it? And that is a new tool that many people don't even know about. So welcome to the show. I am speaking with the expert in hypnosis and sexual addiction. How are you, Suzanne?
I'm doing fairly well, except I do have to let you know I have a little bit of a cough, so hopefully it won't be too bad, but we'll get through it.
All right. Well, I was so interested because I had received a flyer/brochure on the fact that you were helping people with sexual addiction clear many of their impulses through the use of hypnosis. And so I definitely had wanted you on the show. Can you tell me a little bit about, well, what is your definition of hypnosis?
Well, hypnosis is nothing more than bypassing the critical faculty of the conscious mind, the part of the mind that reasons, rationalizes, judges everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go into the unconscious mind, which takes everything quite literally. So if anyone's had children and you tell your children something, they'll take it literally. And if you tell them don't do something, they're going to do it anyway because it doesn't register. So that's a pretty basic definition of hypnosis.
So would you say that hypnosis works with the conscious mind, the subconscious, or the unconscious mind?
It really works through the unconscious and the superconscious mind, actually.
Okay. And
not
you actually mind. Combine hypnosis with neuro-linguistic programming, correct?
Yes, but let me define neuro-linguistic programming for people. Because there's a lot of people who do NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, who don't think it's hypnosis. However, in order for NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, to work, you need to bypass the critical faculty of the conscious mind. So therefore, by definition, it is a form of hypnosis. It is a waking hypnosis, and it's a very fast, effective way to do work.
Okay, and where did you get your neuro-linguistic programming training?
I got it from Advanced Neurodynamics, which is now defunct, and my training was with Matt James and Tad James, primarily.
Well,
and
I
Tad
know,
James now
I
has
a strong company. Programming that it is a treatment that accesses all five of your senses, and there's typically a primary sense, whether that be touch or your hearing, auditory, visual, olfactory, or what you taste. Now, tell me how you combine these two to help people with sexual addiction.
Thank you for that question. Let me see if I can help you understand how this is done.
Okay.
First of all, I have a program. I have a process that I use, okay? But basically, if you think about neuro-linguistic programming, okay, just to begin with, you're absolutely right. We have our five senses. And if we don't delete some things, generalize things, then we're going to be totally insane. And this is sometimes the kids that we know who have over sensory stimulation and they can't really focus on things. So generally speaking, normally functioning people are going to delete a lot of the stuff that comes in. And their unconscious mind is going to operate on its own. So this is how your whole bodily system works. If you think about your muscles and your skeleton and your circulatory system, your nervous system, these all operate without you thinking about anything, which is really good. That's your unconscious mind really working for you. But what you have to understand is that when these things come in, all these stimulations, we necessarily need to be able to delete some. So what happens then is we have something called distortion, which is why maybe you and your mom or you and if you have a sibling have experienced the same event. You'll have different memories of it because of how we remember things not so well. It's really an illusion, quite honestly. Then what happens is we have something called values and attitudes and beliefs. Now, some of these may be conscious, but a lot of them are unconscious. And you know this because sometimes if you're asked by somebody to do something and you get kind of queasy feeling, you don't feel like that's the right thing to do, and you don't know exactly what's going on, that's your belief system, your attitudes, and your values going up against that other person, and it's your internal system telling you not to do it. Well, this brings up the whole idea of something called internal representation. Internal representation can be demonstrated by, if we just take a couple of seconds here and just imagine for a moment, eyes closed is generally the best way to do this, something that somebody close to you, maybe a grandmother or mother, cooked or baked for you, that you really, really love eating. It just tastes so good. And you just imagine the ingredients going together, and you can imagine it cooking or baking. You can just smell it. It smells really, really awesome. And it comes out of the oven or off the stove, and you smell it again, and you taste it. Now, you can open your eyes, and you notice that that thing is not there. There is no such thing. It's just your internal representation of what that food product was, and that is lined up with your emotions and your feelings. Now, this creates a physiology in terms of how we hold our bodies. Like, you know, if you're feeling kind of depressed, you might kind of be bent over, and if you're confident, you're going to be more straight up. And these create your behaviors. So what I do is I help my clients to shift their internal representations from strategies that don't work, the defense mechanisms that they built so they didn't have to think about the negative thoughts they no longer want to think, and in this case through sex addiction, but it could be any addiction, and help them to create strategies and belief systems, thoughts and behaviors that are going to help them to be happy and fulfilled. But the most important part of this whole thing is that we need to have something called a compelling future. There's this amazing man, Richard Gray. And what Richard Gray talks about in his work, he did something called the Brooklyn system in New York. And what he got was the federal penitentiary people going through his program. So it was part of the legal system. They had to go. And these were addicts. And all he did was use neurolinguistic programming, anchoring positive, stable emotions, all right, happy, and grounded. And he had them anchor these emotions to themselves so they didn't need to use. And he talks about the idea of matching that up with their compelling future so they don't have a reason to use. Because there's one of three reasons that people are going to stop their addictions. The first is to get out of the theater, like if they're at war or in a very abusive relationship or household or whatever, get out of it. Most people are going to stop their addictions right there. Religious conversion, we hear about that a lot in the jails, and that does absolutely happen. And the last one is to have a compelling future, something that is more meaningful to these folks. And it has to be something that they're doing for the world at large, not just their families, for them to have a compelling future that's big enough to let go of their addictions. So I take all of these principles and I work with them, along with the whole process of letting go of negative emotions, limiting beliefs. I do the inner child work with them. And, of course, we have to have sessions with addictions because, of course, this is an addiction. So we do some hypnosis sessions for them and then four NLP sessions as well for the addictions. And then we have to work on boundaries, because they don't have boundaries, right? So they have to learn
boundaries,
how to love themselves first. I always tell all my clients, you didn't come out of your mom's vagina hating yourself, so you can learn how to love yourself. Fall back in love with yourself first, and then you can learn how to love others. So that's kind of a quick understanding of how the program basically works that I do. And it
okay, and will you go over those three things one more time?
Which three would you like?
Three things that actually contribute to, I mean, one you said that, that I was writing that down. You were just referencing the fact that there are three elements that typically people experience.
Are you talking about in terms of helping them let go of their addictions? Those three
things?
Absolutely. Okay, so the three things are this. First of all, if you get them out of the theater, the place where it is, that they're feeling abused or at risk or threatened. So if you have a guy over in a theater of war someplace, or you have somebody, like maybe a woman, who's feeling abused, or a kid who has no control in a household that's abusive, get them out of that environment, number one.
Okay.
Number two, religious conversion. This is when people find God, Allah, whatever. And this allows them to let go of it as well. And in fact, interestingly enough, I have a niece who actually did this. She was having issues not with addiction, but with personality disorders and manic depression, as far as I can gather. And we were raised Jewish, and she's actually a Jew for Jesus. And she actually is telling my sister, who's 5 years senior to me, please don't make fun of me. This is really helping me. And it is helping her in a lot of really good ways. So religious conversion. And then the third is a compelling future, which means creating something for your future that's more important than you and your family, something where you're adding something to the world for having been here. So as long as you're doing something of true value and something that fulfills you, all of a sudden you don't need the secondary gain of being ill, addicted, whatever. You can let that stuff go.
Got it. Okay, now I'm rocking with you. Okay. So continue. You've got to be able to then find one of those three elements that's going to appeal to the person that will help motivate them to want to get better. And that's before the hypnosis, during the hypnosis, or after the hypnosis?
It's during their detailed personal history, and I always use a compelling future. It's the only one I have any control over. So what I do is we do the detailed personal history, which tells me quite a few different things. The first thing is I find out what all of their, like, their negative emotions that I need to clear. Because if someone has depression or someone has, like, I had an eating disorder person come in to see me and she wasn't eating, so we were able to clear that. That got rid of her anorexia, believe it or not. If I know how to deal with that, that's the first thing. The second thing is all the traumas that they've undergone, because people don't go into addictions unless they've been traumatized and feel very bad about themselves, all right? So we have to deal with all the traumas. And we use a very simple neurolinguistic programming technique to desensitize it, and then we do something called rewrite history so that the really bad ones, we can have them rewrite it. So, like, they'll do it in black and white, you know, when they go through, and we just keep having them go faster and faster and faster, playing this movie of this event in their unconscious mind until it's blacked out. And then I'll have the really hard ones, I'll have them replace it with something that's more positive for them, and they have to tell me what it is before I allow them to run it, because I want to make sure that it's going to work. And then they run that at regular pace 5 or 6 times in color. And then what that will do is that will get them to the point where that event is no longer an issue at all. It just totally, it wipes it all out so that they don't have any negative content toward those events. And then we have to do losses. There's a lot of times when these people have had bad relationships, or maybe they lost their parents, siblings, friends, whatever, due to their behaviors, or maybe due to death, who knows. And we need to handle that stuff so that they can come to terms and do that inner healing. Then I do an inner child healing with them at the different stages of loss so that their child can explain to them why it was that this happened as best the child can understand it, and then how the child got through all these losses and all these hard times, which really does a lot of healing, and there's a whole process I do that allows them to do it, but it goes very fast in most cases. Then we have to do limiting beliefs because, you know, they have this belief that they can't move on, right? So we have to do that. So I have to get the beliefs from them. which I actually do in the hypnosis, the first hypnosis session. And then I get the compelling future. So the question that they need to answer, there's two of them actually in this case. The first one is, what is it that they're not receiving, which if they got it, the problem would disappear? So in other words, what are you not getting that you need to feel whole and complete? And the second one is, how do you know that you have an undeniable experience of having achieved these changes you're looking for? So that's the difference in our behaviors and our thoughts. So I have a plan from A to Z in terms of what I need to deal with in order to get all these things taken care of in terms of the treatment. And then what we do is we do the hypnosis, and it's actually more like metaphors and talk therapy after that in a way, where we're actually working on boundaries, having them have hard conversations with the people in their lives so that they can gain control of their life. So it's not about running away to the sex addiction in this case. It's about being able to say, you know, I really like you. However, I need these things to change so it can work better for me. And I give them these homeworks, and I give them some non-linguistic programming languaging to use so that they can get what they need from these people. Anyone who cannot do this for this person after one or two tries, they are expected to drop that person from their life. And I don't care if it's a sibling. I don't care if it's a parent. I don't care. That person is toxic to them, and therefore they need to let that person go, and they can fill it with somebody who's better for them. And I have this, like, really cool thing that I do with them. And I don't even know how I came up with this, but one day with a client, I came up with it. And so I have to make a list, and the list is like this. Family. Family's not necessarily biological. Family are the people you can rely on. When you need somebody, they're there. No questions asked. That's family. Then we have something called friends. These are the people that you share interests with, do stuff with, and you can rely on them for certain things. Like, I had a couple of friends who would take me to the airport at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning if I was going over to Africa or Australia or something. You know, these are highly unusual, fabulous friends to have, and you share things and you really like them and you love each other. Those are friends. Then you have acquaintances. These are people you might share some interest and values with. You don't know them that well, but they're in your life. And then you have what I call leeches, L-E-A-C-H-E-S. These are the people who have so many problems, they want you to dance around their problems. You don't need these people in your life, or the people who are really angry and are toxic to you in this way. And they don't have to be mad at you. They can be just angry, hostile people with everybody else in the world making everything wrong so that it's not fun being with them. These are the people you want to drop out of your life. So I teach my folks how to create healthy, positive relationships, first with themselves and then with the people in their world. And then with the sex addicts, they need to learn how to create healthy, loving relationships and learn what love actually is, how it works, how you demonstrate it, that you need to work at it, that you need to not take things for granted that people do for you, and these kinds of ideas. All very, very, very important. And they're held accountable for doing all their homeworks. They all come from their unconscious mind in terms of all the stuff that comes out from the work that we do together. And miraculously,
so now I'm being real quick, because obviously, right, sex addicts have difficulty with boundaries. Can you give me an example of a boundary that you've worked with, specifically with a sex addict?
They're all over the place. I mean, one of the things is that they don't understand. First of all, let me backtrack a little bit and explain to you why they become sex addicts, most of them, okay?
Okay.
And yes, 81% of them have been sexually abused. In my case, with my clients, 80% of them before they were even sexually active themselves and even knew what sex was, okay? But that's not
okay.
Really the reason that they have the sex addiction, okay? The reason they have the sex addiction, it's physiological in nature, actually. It's fascinating. What happens is that the primary caretaker does not hold them. You need to have a right orbital to right orbital connection with the eyes. And what that does is that creates the normal attachment as we know it with another person. So it would be, you know, probably the child to the mother, most likely. And that is created in the amygdala of the brain, and it goes in the hippocampus. Because they don't get that when they're infants, they don't develop what we call normal attachment. So a big part of this process is teaching them how to have these attachments so that they work and that they can be loving, caring people. The big part here is that they need to understand that for most of them, this isn't even their fault. This is something that happened when they were infants. However, once they understand they have a problem, it is their responsibility to take care of it, so it's no longer an issue. So this is something that I believe most people who don't research this stuff would never have any idea of. And I do believe that if the world at large understood this, they would stop blaming people for a problem that they didn't create for the most part.
Yeah, so in other words, they're victims of their environment, and you're teaching them how to become survivors and how to grow from it and reattach and develop healthy
Not
relationships.
Survivors. There is no survivor on this planet that has a quality of life worth living. They're quality of lifers. These are people who have functional, happy, loving, fulfilled lives. They're fulfilled.
Okay.
They're happy people.
Very interesting.
Because my clients, if all you're looking for survivorship, you don't need to come to me. I mean, you know, dealing with the problem is 20%. Dealing with the compelling future is 80%. And I tell my clients, if you're going to commit to working with me, you're going to have to do your homework. And we're going to have a compelling future that is so compelling, you no longer need to have that problem to get whatever you don't want to think about, you know, to stop being primary in your mind, because your mind can only think one thought at a time, right? So if you're busy masturbating
right.
or having sex or whatever, you're not thinking about your negative thoughts that are in your head, right? It's a depressant. Second of all, you need to be a person who actually understands that you have a value in this world that is worthwhile, that it's worth the time to actually do this care. Because if you don't feel that, what is the point of doing the work? Because this is the other thing that one of my addicts pointed out to me. It was a drug addict in this case. But you spend so much time with the addictive behavior, what do you do when you're no longer having the addictive behavior? You need to have something of value to put into that time space. So it's very important. It's like when people do smoking cessation. If you don't put in something in that behavior spot of the smoking that they can do that's healthy and in line with themselves, they're probably either going to go back to smoking or they're going to find other things that are going to be just as destructive, like drinkers go to sugar. Okay, because alcohol is made of sugar. So you need to put something in that's aligned with their values that will help them to stay away from those behaviors.
That makes total sense. Okay, so continue. Then what happens? Because I know that you have something called the timeline therapy. Is that part of your hypnosis?
Yeah, timeline therapy. Okay, so Todd James actually created this when he did his PhD in hypnosis. And there was a book that he wrote on it. I can't remember the name of the book, and I don't have it here with me. But anyway, it's very interesting. What happens is this. When you have a negative emotion or you have a limiting belief and you get a positive learning, L-E-A-R-N-I-N-G, learning, something that you learn that's positive off of it, guess what? It disappears. And you can do this in very, very quick time. So what happens is the process is they go back to the very first time that they ever experienced this negative emotion. And we start with anger, because we don't want to be around angry people, right? Get rid of that. Plus, this is the first one that shows up. So you deal with this. It'll go back to the very first time they ever experienced it. Now, this is where it comes very interesting. When you're dealing with the unconscious mind, this is all we care about. The unconscious is what's driving us. That's why we do the things that we don't want to do, and we're not doing the things that we really want to do or should be doing, right? So what we need to do is we need to go back into time to when this first was created, and it could be based on genealogy. It could be due to past lives. So if the unconscious mind believes in past lives, they'll bring up past lives, even if their conscious mind doesn't believe it. And I tell my clients, I don't care what your conscious mind believes, because if it was believing things that helped you, you wouldn't be here, would you? And usually they'll say that's true. So we just go there. And then we go into the whole thing of bringing them back to that time. So they'll float above what's called the timeline. We have to help them elicit it, teach them how to do that. We go back into time, and then we just basically have them get the positive learnings on each of the negative emotions. And as I said, we do each emotion separately. So you go anger, sadness, fear, okay? And then I figured out that I can do this with the different presenting problems as well and help them get rid of them, very interestingly. Then what you do is, you have them, after they're done doing that, you have them past pace it. So you have them think of a time in the past when they had that negative emotion. And I ask them for a new response to that negative emotion at that experience. And what they're going to do is they're going to come up with a new response. And they have to tell me what it is, because, again, I want to make sure that they're getting something new and that's something that's going to work for them, right? And I'm not just redoing something that's going to make them victim. Because if you're a victim, well, you don't need to be working with me. So
absolutely.
They need to... Thank you. So what they need to do is that they need to get a positive learning or two. I found that kinesthetic people who feel a lot, they learn by touch, and they are very deeply emotional. They take more time to process everything because they don't even know what their feelings are. They can't put them into words, so they get in touch with their feelings, and then they can put it into words. So auditory, audio, digital, and the visual people don't have this problem. But the kinesthetics get way more out of the work. It's very interesting. So we do that with them. And what happens is, lo and behold, they're cleared of these negative emotions up to now. So that acts kind of like if you put someone on an antidepressant that actually works for them, that they have a baseline where it's no longer about, no, I can't do it, but, right, and they come up with their excuses. All of a sudden you have a baseline where you can actually do all this other deeper work with them. A lot of it is done in hypnosis. The inner child work is done in a pretty deep hypnosis state. The forgiveness work is done in a deep hypnotic state. And then what we can do from that perspective is we can help them with their boundaries, which they're going to be doing out in the world, from a point of view where they're feeling pretty whole and pretty complete at that point. Sex addiction, to help someone clear sex addiction, on average takes 4 to 6 weeks when they work with me. That's all it takes. And the only reason it takes that long at all is because I have to do the 4 addiction sessions, and I need to have some time to work with them on their boundaries. But pretty much that's as long as it takes. All done.
Okay, so you have just really gotten this protocol worked out. Tell me a little bit about the difference between somebody who says, I'm a hypnotist and I can work with your problem, versus a hypnotherapist.
There really is no difference other than the state that you live in or the country that you live in. In some states like Connecticut, I think Iowa, Florida, you can't call yourself a hypnotherapist unless you are a licensed practitioner of some sort, meaning, you know, medical, nurse, social worker, mental health worker, something like that.
Yeah.
In Massachusetts, California, they don't care. So in both the states that I've lived in, no one cares. otherwise, there is absolutely no difference. It's really...
Okay, so
really
obviously
know,
you're a hypnotherapist, and tell me...
No,
what
I'm not
made
a hypnotherapist.
You decide to develop this approach specifically for sex addicts?
Okay, so let me correct the first thing that you said, then I'll explain the second one with the sex addicts, okay, in the protocol. So basically, I can call myself whatever I want here in the state of California, as I could in Massachusetts, but I'm not calling myself a hypnotherapist, because if you think about the old-time hypnotists, they weren't hypnotherapists, they were hypnotists. And I like to give credit to the people of my lineage, and the people who came before me. Many of them didn't have any kind of therapeutic background at all. They were lay hypnotists. They studied this stuff. They learned how the minds worked. We have Dave Ellman, who taught the doctors and dentists from his stage hypnotist stuff that where they met, how to help a woman give birth without feeling anything, you know, from, you know, basically her chest down to the bottom, popping out babies easily, both with a, you know, while they're asleep in trance and in trance, he could do it both ways, to helping kids get over fear of having injections. And he was a lay hypnotist. So I align myself with these people. I don't have a degree. I don't want a degree. I do find myself. Answer to your second question, how did this happen? Very interesting story. I had this kid, and I can use his name because he wants me to use his name. His name is Ontario Martin, and he came to me when he was 16 years old, and his problem was that he had actually been in a program from the time he was 5 and a half for inappropriate sexual behavior. My hypothesis at the time, when his dad had called in shock when this program had told him that his son was a pedophile, which is totally impossible because he can't be 16 years old, never penetrated anyone, and be a pedophile, problem number one. But number two was that he was actually adopted by this family when he was 5 and a half. And what happened was he was starting to be inappropriate with the two younger adopted siblings, so they put him in this program. He was spending more time in the mental hospital than he was in school in the program because they had him on so many medications, and they never, ever told him what the problem was, or they never actually listened to hear what the problem actually was. So this was his problem. His problem was that he was very angry that his mother abandoned him. No one, until they came in and did the detailed personal history, the parents were to come with him for all his sessions, which they did. And that's when the mom told her son, you know, your mother died of AIDS when you were 6 months old. Well, a death is a little bit different than thinking that you were dumped in some foster home someplace, right? And so this kid was in 4-point restraints and programs since he was 7 years old up until he was 16. They had told him at the age of 16 that by 18 he'd be dead or in jail. And his father was a very smart man, and he had actually gone out and researched for 5.5 years how to help his son. And he had taken James's course. We had learned about timeline therapy, and he basically came to me just to do timeline therapy. But it was Antonio who actually taught me how to do the things that I needed to learn how to do. Plus, the other thing that was very interesting is he is the first person who said, his dad was in the place, you know, in the session with me, when I did the forgiveness work, he said, you know, Suzanne, I have something else I need to do. I said, what's that, Antonio? He said, I need to ask my family for forgiveness too. So we went through all the family, and he just did this in his own mind, like chair therapy would be done, you know, just imagining them and talking back and forth in the hypnotic state. And then his dad was there, and I kept him in the hypnotic state. Dad was in an awake state, and he did this with his father. And his father came back and said, Antonio, I just want to tell you I am so sorry for everything you've had to go through up to this point in your young life. If there's anything that I or your mother have ever done to make things harder on you, I want you to let us know. And if we ever do anything in the future, please let us know. My God, I was like tearing up, you know. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that can happen. And then I had him get up out of the chair, still in trance, and hug his father first time because he was healed at that point. I was also pretty pretty good at hypnotizing because I told Antonio while he was in trance, I said, you know, the only way that we can make sure that we can help other kids in a similar situation and other sex addicts is for you to know that you're never going to act out inappropriately again in a sexual manner. So from this day forward, you know what you need to do to experiment sexually, which is normal for you at this stage in life, but to do it in an appropriate manner so that we know that this work that we did with you can be used for other people so they can overcome their sex addictions or sexual compulsions and any of these things that may be problematic for them. And you know that kid never had a problem since that day. And his testimony with his name on the bottom of it is right on my website, dawningvisions.com. And I have three testimonials actually on him. There's one from his mom right after we did the work, from his dad a year later. And he did his actually before I came out here to California in 2015. It was like 8 years after I had worked with him. Yeah, 2010,
so that would
like
be
that.
Your website at www.dawningvisions.com?
Yeah, you don't even need the www. It's just dawningvisions.com. We'll get you there. Uh-huh.
Okay,
and if you look under
Antonio
Martin.
For our listening audience, that's Dawning, D-A-W-N-I-N-G, Visions, V-I-S-I-O-N-S.com. So,
exactly.
So his testimonial is on that, on your website. And you also have books and MP3s and all sorts of things at your store. Is that correct?
Yes. I created a lot of I ended up writing a book because it was a fascinating situation with this sex addiction. So I ended up writing a book on it, and I actually dedicated it to Antonio for helping me learn how to do this healing work. Because you learn what you need to learn from your clients more than theory. I mean, yes, you need to know some theory, but honestly, they tell you what they need, you know? So that's how I learned. And then I have a book on eating disorders I learned from my anorexic and bulimic clients. They actually, three of them in a row, one anorexic and bulimics, they all came in and they said, you need to write a book to help explain to the mental health people how to actually help heal us. So I wrote that book. And that's I have a forward by one of the bulimics that was healed for 3 years at the point she wrote that forward. And that was pretty cool. And then I wrote a book, Learnings from My Journey, which is a boundaries book. Actually, it's a book on boundaries, but it's basically based on essays and teaching people how to look at things from a different perspective, like another person's perspective. And that's both from the person who is ill and from the person who's not ill, based on the story that I'm talking. These are the learning stories that I actually use. Actually, one of my clients suggested I write that because I had written over 100 pages of emails with all these learnings, and she had written them all out, and I just added it and just did basically an autobiography of all the learnings, wisdom that I got through my entire life. And I have a second one in the works. I learned a lot of stuff when I went to Africa, so I need to do more. And then I have Wake Up Doctors, 10 Steps to Reclaim Your Patient's Respect and Trust.
Well,
and that is for free when they sign on.
Obviously, these books are all kind of testimonials to the work you did and the issues that people had. And you have been treating a variety of disorders for a long time. Is there anything unique the sexual addiction that makes it more difficult to work with?
No, it's easy to work with. I love my sex addicts. I love them more than you can imagine. Because what happens is once they make a decision to actually clear the problem, once they have enough shame and guilt and they're sick of hiding their problems, worrying about getting caught by the law or at work or whatever. They make the decision to do the work. They just do the work. It goes really quick and easy. Boom, done. They're the easiest clients I have to work with.
Okay, so now for people that want to work specifically with you, you are located in what city and what state?
I'm in San Pedro, California, but I do it on Skype. I've been working with clients back in Boston, and I lived there for 35 years, and I can do it on Skype. I've done it with people as far away as Nairobi. You know, so
wow.
It doesn't matter where they're located. I can do it anywhere.
And then is that, do you charge a fee per the session or per hour?
No. Program. It's a program fee.
Got it. You are
because
a member of the International Hypnosis Federation, correct?
Yes, I am. Yes, Shelley Stockwell. She's amazing. Yes. That's her owner.
You also serve on the Torrance Lomita Drug Prevention Community Council, so you do work in your community.
Absolutely. Yeah, I learned about this actually through someone I met at a networking event, and there's actually another hypnotist who is on that committee as well, and it's really to stop the kids from getting involved in drugs in the community. So it's really amazing. And teaching the parents the signs and symptoms and what they need to do in terms of not having kids go in that direction as best they can. It's wonderful. It's a wonderful thing. Billerica, when I was in Massachusetts, I did a lot of stuff around kids and bullying and those kinds of things. There are three different organizations I was on that worked on that stuff because these are the other issues, especially online bullying is a really, really hard one for kids these days.
Now, is there one technique that you can do for us over the phone that would be useful for our listeners?
Sure. How about we do one about, I'll do one letting go of anger, okay? So I'll do a little timeline with you guys.
Okay.
So that you can have an experience of this. And, you know, unfortunately, many of us have anger for all kinds of different reasons. So let us do it this way. Now, the first thing that we need to do is we need to get relaxed so that we can, you know, be able to concentrate on what we're doing. And the easiest way to do that is to take a couple of deep breaths. So just breath, hold it, exhale. Take another deep breath, hold it, exhale. Now all you're going to do, and you can do this with your eyes closed because we want what's called an idiomoto response. We want to be from your nervous system, not thinking. So the first thing that I would like people to do is I'd like them to think about something that was happy and pleasant from their past, anything at all. And I would like them to use the hand with they write with, just point their finger, their index finger, in the direction from where that event comes from. And the way that you do it is you just do it. Wherever it lands is perfect. So just do that first. Let me know when you got that done.
Is it done?
Good. Now, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to think of something positive and happy that you're looking forward to in your future and point in the direction from where that comes. Let me know when you got that done. Now, what I want you to do is I just want you to connect those two dots that you found for these events. And that's your timeline. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to float above the timeline. And I'm just going to show you kind of the positions you got to do first, okay? So I will float above your timeline. And you can do floating, seeing yourself floating, feeling yourself floating. However you float, just float above your timeline. And I would like you to go out into the past to that first point you found in the past. And when you're there, just let me know.
I'm there.
Great. Now what I want you to do is I want you to go further above your timeline and further into the past. Just do it a little bit. When you're done, let me know.
Go anywhere I want in the past? Further?
You're going further out into the past.
Earlier.
And further above your timeline.
Got it.
Good. Now, I'd like you to float back over now and into the future. When you're in the future, at the point you found, let me know you're there.
Okay.
And then float into now, and your eyes closed.
Got it.
Okay, great. Now, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to go ahead and answer a couple of questions for me, okay? Your first question is, would it be okay with your conscious mind to let go of the negative emotion of anger and to be consciously aware of it? Does that work for you?
Absolutely.
Great. Now, if you were to know, and only if you were to know, the very first time that you experienced anger, was it before, during, or after your birth? And then just tell me the first thing that pops in your head.
Before.
Okay. And if you were to know, was it while you were in vitro, or was it in a past life? Or was it genealogical?
Okay, ask me that again.
Were you in utero, in your mom's uterus?
Yes, in utero.
Okay, what month?
First, I don't know, I'm thinking January.
January, so how many months would that be about? Based on when you were
that
born.
Would be my very first month in utero.
Now, this is what I want you to do. I want you to float above your timeline to January when you're in your mom's uterus, okay, developing. And a little bit before that, and I want you to tell me a little bit about what's going on in there. And just let it come to you, okay?
I just really sense a feeling of just ease, as if my mother is very, very unhappy, and I'm kind of the byproduct of that unhappiness in that I can feel and sense it. I don't know what it's about.
That's okay. This is what I want you to do now. Perfect. I want you to float right above, directly above the event, looking down on the event, and I want you to get a positive learning on that event. When you have that positive learning or learnings, tell me what they are.
And when you say a positive learning, you mean some sort of explanation for what that might have been about?
Positively stated. So it's not about how horrible things are. It's about something that you learn that positively helps you in your life.
Okay.
So when you have it, or them, let me know what they are.
I feel like the image, the thought, feeling that popped into my mind is that I learned how to detach immediately from that experience and provide some safety for myself.
Okay, cool. Go ahead and see if there's any other positive learnings for you there.
I'm not pulling up any.
Okay, so now we're going to test this, okay? So what we're going to do is we're going to go a little before that event, like 15 minutes before that event, okay, when you're in utero. And I want you to notice if there's any anger there or if it's disappeared now.
Oh, I don't feel any, so it must have dissipated.
Perfect. So now this is what you're going to do. You're going to start at that point, 15 minutes before that event, and you're going to come all the way back up to now. And you can do this in your own mind, and if you get stuck, I'll help you, okay? But your job here is to get positive learning on each of the events that comes into your mind all the way back to now. Now, understand, your mind is going to put a bunch of things that are very similar as one thing, and your mind can do this, your unconscious mind can do this very quickly. So let it go as quick as it can so you can get your learnings, and you're going to come back to now. When you come back to now, you're going to tell me you're back at now, and you're going to open your eyes. Clear?
Okay.
Good. So go ahead, take as long as you need to do it, and when you're done, you're going to have to say, done, so that I know, because we're on the phone, I can't see you, right?
Right. Done.
That was quick. Now, what we're going to do is you're going to tell me the themes, P-H-E-M-E-S, that you got from your learnings, your positive learnings. Tell me what those were.
Sense that I got a lot of strength because I learned how to protect myself as well as to detach from that feeling so that I was no longer affected by it.
Perfect. Now, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to close your eyes again. I'd like you to go into the past and the time and event that you had picked up at the past, that there was some anger, and I want you to say you're going to have a new response to it in the past. When you have that new response, tell me what it is.
Okay, done.
Okay, so what
that experience was that I was having some difficulty with my husband, and I was asking him to hustle so that we weren't going to be late, and he got very aggravated with me and actually became passive-aggressive and went slower. And so what I imagined was that I detached, I removed myself, I went in the car and sat and just read and made myself feel comfortable.
So that sounds like that worked out pretty well for you. So that's great. Now, I'd like you to take an event that happened in the past that can happen again in the future, another one, okay? And I want you to tell me your new response out there in the future.
Okay, I'm at work, and somebody has taken two of my favorite cups, and they've never returned to the kitchen. And I immediately tell myself that they must have needed those cups better than I, and I turn that anger into generosity and let go of that attachment to those cups.
Okay, so now you have just cleared anger up to now. You can do this process for yourself. Very easily, whenever you get into a situation, you have a negative emotion, you've got negative emotion, you figure out what your positive learning is right there in the moment, you can do it, and then you do a past pace in terms of getting a new response to it, future pace, you're done. You can do it right there while the person's angry with you, and you can just let it go, just like that. And you can do that with anger, you can do it with sadness, you can do it with fear, you can do it with guilt, you can do it with hurts.
And what about shame for our listeners who are just so riddled with shame?
Yes.
And they do it with
shame. Shame too. Well, guilt and shame are very close, but yeah, you can do it with shame if you want to. Sure, it's a negative emotion. In fact, you know, my anorexic, what she had taught me, who's now no longer an anorexic for ages now, it's 2005, she actually had done this entire intervention with her for eating disorders, which is a little different. But she asked me, she said, Suzanne, I never liked eating, ever, and I don't know why. Could you do that negative emotion thing that you did with me so we could figure out what's going on? And I did it with her. She had been a pre-med student into a Russian literature student at Harvard University, and she had like a 3.87 cumin pre-med. So we're talking a very bright woman here, okay? And so we did it. Come to find out that if you can imagine those chairs that kind of go like underneath the table that you put like toddlers in to keep them still, she was in one of those, and she had seen her parents shoving oatmeal into her face with butts. They were both doctors. It was from that point at 2 years old that she had made a decision that food was something she did not enjoy. At 19 years old, it showed up as anorexia. Interesting. We blew that
That's
out.
That's very interesting. And, you know, I also thought it was interesting that I answered in utero because that is a concept that is very foreign to me. I don't know why I said that.
Your unconscious mind.
Like I believe I have all these memories from in utero, but you told me to go with the very first thing, and that's what happened.
But I,
so
but I tell you, I don't care about your conscious mind.
It's fighting what is coming up
right
for you.
Mm-hmm. Because we're working, when we're doing neurolinguistic programming, not timeline therapy is a form of neurolinguistics, which is hypnotic. So I'm working in the unconscious mind. So, yes, I want you to trust your unconscious mind, because your unconscious mind is where we have to make the change if we want permanent change. It's the way it works. Now, let me teach you something else that's very interesting that most people don't understand. When we're dealing with people with their unconscious mind, the most important prime directive, meaning the most important thing that our unconscious mind is there to do, is to protect us from those things that our conscious mind cannot handle, i.e. repressed memories. Okay? Now, if it's doing a really good job at keeping us addicted to whatever, doing whatever this psychiatrically diagnosed, whatever it is, thing that we have, that I don't use these terms, but, you know, they do psychology or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We have to understand that our unconscious mind is doing a really good job protecting us, usually in a way that we have outlived that usefulness. So how do you bypass that? Well, thank God I was trained by people who are very much into esoterics, because what I learned was if you bring people into their higher conscious or their superconscious, the Jung's idea of the collective unconscious, and I just ask them, what is their divine, you know? Is it God or is it the universe? I don't care what they call it. It's whatever it is. We're going into their view of the world. That's what we have to do. We have to enter their model of the world. So we go there. We bring them up to their superconscious mind, and then I'm working superconscious to superconscious with them, So the unconscious mind is never in the way. And that's how I get extremely excellent results with my clients, because I go a step further working with the spirituality.
Well, you obviously have a wealth of knowledge, and you've studied with some of the best. Unfortunately, now we have to end, and I know that you had a special opportunity for our listening audience. So I was wondering if you could share with them free gift that you have if they sign up for your newsletter.
Yeah, there's actually 5 free gifts, but I think the most important one, I mean, some of them are aimed toward, well, for the sex addicts in particular, there is, if you sign up for the newsletter, and you also get the podcast I do weekly as well, there's actually the first part of my book on sex addiction is there, and in there, there's a quiz for them to take based on actually the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual's protocol, what creates an addiction. And if you go down that protocol and you get like 7 of them, then you probably need to get some help with this problem. It's going to be something that is not going to be able to be doable in your own world, no matter how hard you try to make that happen. And so they can have that for free. There's also a free MP3 download to let go of stress is on there as well. And there's some other stuff on there. I can't even remember what else. But there's 5 free gifts in total. Plus the book, Wake Up Docs, which they'll get into their emails in 10 sections.
Well, I have to tell you, this has been very informative. I love the work you're doing. I am speaking with Suzanne Kellner-Zink, a certified trainer of hypnosis and NLP. And thank you so much for offering all this information. You give the addicts and certainly their partners hope that they can take care of these issues by working outside of the box. So I hope they will go to your website, which is dawningvisions.com, and download for their free gifts and take a look at your website and work with you through Skype. Thank you so much.
They can also call me. They can call me, too, if they want to at 781-315-1719, and I'd be more than happy to answer their questions and see if this is something that would be workable for them, because it's not for everybody. It's for the people who are ready to let go of their problems now. If I have a guy who's more interested in telling me about his sexual things or his happy ending massages and, you know, how beautiful his dick is to the massage therapist who got an extra amount of money for finishing it off, I'm not interested in working with them. But the ones who are ready to go, those are the people who are my clients, because I will get them through the process very quickly and very effectively, but they have to be ready to let it go now. That's the difference between doing NLP and even more so than hypnosis. NLP, we like to do it fast and quick. Hypnosis is pretty fast versus the conventional therapeutic way. And there's also a video on my website, too, that explains the difference between, you know, how I work hypnotically and with NLP versus a conventional mental health practitioner. It's about 2.5 minutes long with some of my clients in there.
Well, and so I really appreciate your opportunity to talk with them, to work with them in workshops, to have provided books for them. And I wish you the best, and I hope to be talking with you again.
Anytime. I am so, so happy that you called so that I could get this information out there, because my feeling is that I want people to have happy, healthy relationships. And if you are married or if you have children at home, especially young girls, and you're out there doing these things, you need to stop doing these things and get your family and be congruent. That's the only way you're going to be happy and fulfilled. And this is a way that I know works. And so far, it's worked 100% for every guy who worked through my program. If they stopped in the middle, they don't count. But every single one who worked through the program, they are all clear of it to this day, as far as I know. And I did follow up with all of them.
Excellent, excellent. Well, thanks, Suzanne, and we'll talk soon.
You got it. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
You're welcome. All right. I was talking with Suzanne Kellner-Zink, a certified trainer of hypnosis and NLP. You heard her actually saying that she would guarantee her work. If you do the work and follow it directly, she'll guarantee her work for you. So it's just another opportunity to work outside of the box and try some things that will help to alleviate the urges and cravings and the sexual addiction itself. Now, I look forward to working with you week after week after week. As I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. We'll catch up with you next week for more Sex Help with Carol the Coach.